Clear up any confusion right to begin with. Let's start with the fact that this gentleman here is Chad Stewart.
Yeah.
Last time I checked.
Which must mean that I'm Jeremy Clyde. Yeah. There's a cheap round of applause for you.
I want to tell you something. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Good.
A few days ago, someone came up to us at a meet and greet and said, "You guys are the best preserved 60s act I've ever seen."
We said pickled, is what we said. Okay, we met in, I dare hardly say this, we met in September 1960 at the Central School of Speech and Drama in London. And we became instant friends, and it wasn't difficult to recognize a fellow traveler because we were two guys with guitars on our backs, so that's what how it worked.
Bit of a giveaway.
And we discovered that one of the things we had in common was we were crazy about the work of a guy called Buddy Holly. Yeah, so.
He's the patron saint of guys who wear glasses, you know that. I'm very grateful to Buddy.
We thought we'd kick off with one of the first songs we ever did together. It's one of Buddy's.
So I could sit and cry. Darling, gee, what have you done to me? Guess it doesn't matter anymore. Do you remember, baby, last September, how you held me tight each and every night? Whoops-a-daisy, how you drove me crazy. Guess it doesn't matter.
Thanks, Frank.
There's no use in me up crying. I've done everything and now I'm sick of trying. I've thrown away my nights, wasted all my days over you. You go your way, I'll go mine. Now and forever till the end of time, I'll find somebody new, and baby, we'll say we're through, and you won't matter anymore.
School hops and impress the girls, and we did just that, did we not, Chad?
We did indeed.
And
the band was called,
yes,
ladies and gentlemen, from the What Were We Thinking file, we christened the band The Jerks. I don't know, do you? I mean, that was before the dance craze of The Jerk. That's back when jerks really were jerks. I don't know, what were we thinking?
I can't imagine. And to prove just how much of a jerks we were, we're going to give you a little touch of The Jerks. playing a big instrumental hit at the time called Apache. And it gets better, trust me, because we are going to do it with the original choreography. Yes!
Okay. Imagine, if you will, that this is a Stratocaster. It doesn't look like one, but never mind. Songs and playing pretty much wherever there was food.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I went. Humble beginnings.
Indeed. And we were playing in a little place called Tina's Bar in London, and the word spread, we were doing folk songs and things, and the word spread, and a guy called John Barry came down to see us, and he was a big producer at the time. He'd just written the James Bond theme, and he went on later to win Oscars, Born Free, film music, very nice guy. He was forming a record label. And he came down, and he must have seen us do this song because it's on the first album, which he produced. So here it is, Dirty Old Town. Train Sold on our contract to another even smaller label in America. And we got a call one day and somebody rang us and said, hey guys, you're going up the charts in America. Wow, really? The only thing was, the charts we were going up were the country charts.
Wow.
So it could have been different. We could have been Jad and Jeremiah. But we were.
Yeah, they found out we were English and had hair and they kicked us out of there.
So,
get them boys out of this here, John. It didn't work out, did it?
No, it did not. So we went to America because we were having a hit there. Except we didn't go just to America. We went, well, we went, you told me, Chad, you told me.
Well, yeah, we went very top draw because Jeremy's dad was a film producer and he was a partner of Douglas Fairbanks Studios. So he was, you know, connected. I mean that in a good way, not a bad way. And. So when we went to America, we went to stay for 2 weeks at Dean Martin's house, which was amazing, you know. I thought everybody lived like that, you know, it was my first impression. It was weird. Wasn't it amazing?
That was fantastic. They were very nice to us. They were sweet. Dean was sort of, he wasn't around too much. He was always on the golf course or under a sun lamp, really. But, yeah, we kind of got used to a whole way of life over there. I mean, oh look, there's Ursula Andress in the pool, that's nice. Or, you know, Natalie Wood dropped by for tea, you know, that kind of thing.
One of my favorite memories is going to Lucille Ball's house, and she was really nice, and she took us in the kitchen and said, there's some little people I want you to meet. And I thought, oh, what's this, you know, hamsters or something. And so we go in there and there's a couple of parakeets. And I thought, well, that's nice. Yeah, I like parakeets. And she said, I've called them Chad and Jeremy, which I thought was, hey.
That's true.
I mean, that's, you know.
Not a lot of people can say that.
Only us, actually.
Anyway, so unfortunately, we had to leave Beverly Hills and we had to go on the road. And that was a different thing entirely. We went on the road with this little record label, and they took us around the back of tiny little radio stations, most of which have gone now. And that's when we started to hear a whole different kind of music, because they were throwing out old 45s. In fact, I've still got them. And this was one of the old 45s that they were throwing out. It's a Jimmy Reed thing called Take Out Some Insurance. And we started to hear a whole different kind of music. So. Here's our version, anyway.
I don't know what Jimmy would think of this, but it's the English duet version. Here we go. 3, 4.
If you leave me, baby, Lord knows what I'd do. I guess that I would die, sweetheart, if I don't. You take out some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. If you ever want to say goodbye, If you leave me, baby, if you don't come back, if you leave me high and dry, I might have a heart attack. Take out some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. If you ever have to say goodbye, I'm gonna lay right down and die.
Album. Here's another one off the first album, an old standard, and are you ready for
it? Yeah, I'm ready. As ready as I'll ever be. We, when we heard the Beatles' first album, I mean, we were around when they were around, we sort of knew them in the old days, and they put a beautiful ballad on the first, yeah, see, three cheers for those, because nobody would be here without them, would we? And anyway, big round of applause. Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Paul put a ballad, Till I Was You, on the first album. And because we were always trying to be original, we decided to copy him. So, yeah, well, you know, copy the best.
Yes, absolutely.
So we put September in the Rain on our album. And some people did. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Here's a sort of new version of it. Here we go. The leaves of brown came tumbling down. Remember,
what was that?
In September, in the rain,
weird place.
The sun went out just like a dying ember. That September, in the rain. To play a sweet refrain. Though spring is here, to me it's still September. That September in the rain. That September.
what was that? It sounded like a dragon in pain.
I think somebody won.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, I think
won?
So.
Oh, all right.
Anyway, or maybe it was a wolf having a hard time. Who knows? Okay. Folk songs. We started doing folk songs in little clubs and things, places, Chad said, and gosh, things have changed since those days. Boy. So, bearing that in mind, we thought we'd bring a good old good one up to date. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. A folk song for our times.
1, 2, 3, 4.
If I had a Hummer, I'd drive it in the morning. I'd drive it in the evening, all over this town. Leave the engine running outside the post office. And if you walk by me, you better hold your breath, 'cause I won't care if you choke to death. It's a mean machine and it guzzles gas. If you don't like it, you can kiss my ass. I'm gonna drive my Hummer all over this town. Yeah.
We have a lot of Hummers up in Sun Valley where I live. It's kind of nauseating, but never mind. We've been singing that song all over the States for a few years now, and now they don't make them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it might have been something we said.
Might or might not. Okay, so we moved off this little tiny label and we went to a bigger label called Columbia. This is the first hit we had on Columbia. It's a song written by Van McCoy. Before and after.
1, 2, 3.
He wears a smile, I wear a frown, and I can tell whenever he's around. And all the eyes of everyone are staring, and I know that they're comparing the two, whispering and saying when they do, see the difference between the old and new, before and after losing you.
He wears a smile, I wear a frown.
Okay, this song is based on a poem in which the writer, as a parent, compares himself to the roots of a tree and his children to the branches, and I like that. I thought that was a great metaphor. I like metaphors. And I guess I must like children, because I've met so many of them. No, it wasn't my fault, really. It just sort of happened. So I have six children now, three tries at marriage, you know how it goes. And I now have, my ninth grandchild was just born a couple of weeks ago. Cheap round of applause. Actually, it's a very expensive round of applause.
Very, very expensive.
But Jeremy's first grandchild was born also, yep, just at the end of last year.
That's right, just catching up.
Yeah. So, gosh, you guys are so nice. Just, you know, you shouldn't encourage us, you know. So if you want advice about grandkids, you know, come
to me. Thanks, Chad, I'll come to you, yeah.
I realized, though, that with six children and nine grandchildren, last summer they all came to visit, and we had a group photo, and I was staring at them and going, I'm a patriarch. How did this happen? Oh, well, never mind. Anyway, so here's the patriarch song.
Of your life, are governed by the strength.
it's Mother's Day, I believe. Yes. It is, by the way, it is a different day in England. So my mother's not feeling left out because I haven't called her, because she's already had the call.
Right.
About a month ago in England. So there you are. I don't know whether any... Did you all remember to do your duty? Let's see. This is a song called Lady Wants a Gentleman about the fact that men sometimes forget these important things. Here we are.
Yeah, and then look what happens.
Yeah.
It's very tricky.
Very tricky.
Okay, ready? 3, 4.
Yesterday's gone now. Now, I'll tell you something about this. This was just covered by, of all people, Billy Bob Thornton. And very good too, very, very good version, country version. And so there you are.
Well, I tell you, I mean, you know, a lot of people start laughing when we mention Billy Bob, but I don't think that's a good idea. It'll make him very cross. And you don't want to make Billy
you
Bob.
You don't want to make him cross. We saw there's a clip of Billy Bob being interviewed in Canada. And he doesn't want to be interviewed. It's
no, it's too early in the morning.
It's quite something. Yeah.
He hasn't had his happy pill. Anyone see that? That was so funny. He wouldn't answer any questions. He just sat there. Poor man. I felt so sorry for the interviewer. Anyway, Billy Bob actually did say something nice about our version and about my song. He said, if you take away the English accents, it's a hillbilly song.
which is a compliment.
Yeah, well, I think it's a compliment.
Yeah.
I mean, how many 18-year-old little British lads could write a hillbilly song? It's dumb luck, actually. Okay, here we go. This is the British version. It's not really good. This thing is refusing to stay. Okay. Wait a minute. Okay, sorry, I was discombobulated.
Leave my heart a-breaking and pain.
This next song is actually a blues, and it's going back to that Lady Wants a Gentleman song about how if you don't treat her right, you know, we all know what happens. Well, I'm not clear at this point whether I wrote this about my life or my dog's life, but it's probably a bit of both, actually, and it's called The Doghouse Blues, and all you dogs and all dogs in the audience will know what I mean. Here it is, Doghouse Blues. I'm out in the doghouse, howling at the moon, praying to the dark star, she'll let me come home soon. The doghouse blues, it's a sad, sad tune. All I know is I want back on my bed. I got the doghouse blues. Yeah, the doghouse blues. You got nothing left to lose, but you got the doghouse blues. She give me kibbles and bits when I need steak. How much more can an old dog take? I got the doghouse blues. Yeah, the doghouse blues. You got nothing left to lose, but where you got the doghouse blues? Speak to me. If I don't, she gonna let me in, but I know she won't. I got the doghouse blues. The doghouse blues. You got nothing left to lose. Glad you got the doghouse blues. Now all you young dogs, heed my advice. If you wanna stick around, you better treat her nice. Forget the doghouse blues. Yeah, the doghouse blues. You got nothing left to lose when you got the doghouse blues.
Thank you.
Doghouse blues.
Okay, what's up? Here's a little story for you. You'll recognize this. I'm in London in 1966, January 1966, Trivia Freaks, and I'm introduced to a singer-songwriter who is working in the folk clubs in London. Not particularly successful or anything at this point. And he comes over to my place, and he sings one brilliant song after another. The man is a genius songwriter, absolutely fantastic. And I get very overexcited. I call Chad, and I found this amazing guy, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, cut a long story short, Chad comes over to London, we start making an album. And this guy gives us one of his songs to record, right? So, and not only that, he's in and out of the studio, he's being very sweet and kind, he's making the tea, he's being very sweet and supportive. And while we're in the studio, he gets a call from New York saying that one of his old tracks has become a hit. So off he goes to fame and fortune. Okay, now, the point about this is, we had this song first. Yes.
Yeah, I'm feeling very sad at this point.
Yes.
He didn't just get a hit, he got a number one.
He got a number one.
He got a big smash-o-buffo
yes,
number one hit.
Yes.
And the logical thing to do,
yeah.
I mean, you all know what to do, right? It's like, hey, we got ourselves a song by a hit songwriter. Let's put it out and let's coattail on his success.
That's what we should have done.
Yeah, but we didn't do that.
No, we didn't. No.
We released one of yours.
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. And I think you should tell everyone what it was called.
Well, the title tells the story, I think. It was called Ballad of a Teenage Failure.
Yep. Lived up to its name, didn't it?
It certainly did.
Yes, it did.
It did. It stiffed it. What did it do?
It skyrocketed to oblivion.
Yes. Very good. I like that.
Yeah, I like scoring stuff now, yeah.
Okay, so here's the song that we should... The song ended up on the album. But here's the song that we should have put out as a single. And when we do it, you will know who it was who came over to my place. People who don't.
Yeah, one thing about traveling all over America is how different audiences are and everything like that. But, I mean, everybody knows that's Paul Simon, but not in Florida, no. They don't know that. No. I don't know what their problem is, but they're a little strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now what?
So now what?
Well, you've got the list, and I have no idea what's happening. What? Oh, that one. Request for this song. I have no idea what it means, but everybody likes this a lot. If anyone knows what it means, you know, tell me afterwards, because I'd love to know. All right. Three and four.
Full of sorrow, never wept.
Sort of an Eagles tribute. I used to tour with Tim Schmidt and whatever, and we're sort of connected in a loose kind of way. But this is one of their songs reworked somewhat, and it helps understand the meaning if you're a vegetarian, okay? All right.
See the Dick Van Dyke show?
It was on the other night, wasn't it, actually? Yeah, it was.
That was such fun.
It was the first one, and I think it was the best. And Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and Carl Reiner and all the people were terrific. The old saying is, what is it? The bigger you are, the nicer you are. Yeah. They certainly were, weren't they?
They were sweethearts. They were absolutely lovely.
And they let us come in and, make suggestions or whatever.
Yeah.
And Jeremy came up with a line, they loved it. Carl Reiner loved it, Dick Van Dyke loved it, and it was really dumb. I mean, we're not sure why it's funny, really. But anyway, the way it worked is we're the Redcoats, right? And we're going in Robert Laura Petrie's house because the fans have made life difficult at the hotels and nobody will have us. Shades of Beatles and all that. And so I walk in and I go, "It's a lovely house you've got here, Mrs. Petrie." And do you remember what you said?
No, what
he said in this idiotic Birmingham voice, he said, he walked up to this piece of furniture and he said, "You know what we call one of these in England?"
That's right.
And Dick says, "What?"
Well, I say, "A chair." You meant to be there.
See, they don't think it was. We were in Chicago last night and they peed themselves laughing. What's the matter with you?
Actually, you know, people come up to me occasionally and go, "Chair." Anyway, really weird.
You had to be there.
You had to be there. Okay.
You had to be in Chicago.
Yeah. You. We also did the Patty Duke show. Anyone see that? Yeah. We were Nigel and Patrick.
Yeah.
And then we did two episodes of Batman. Yeah. And yes. Well, it was for those of you that didn't see Batman, well, just to give you a little taste of this exciting piece of television, the plot was that we were doing this next song, which was a hit at the time, and we were working, singing it in a theatre set, so there's curtains here, right? And we're in the middle of the song, and on comes the Catwoman, played by Julie Newmar, looking rather scrumptious. And she has a ray gun in her hand, as you do if you're a Catwoman, and she points it at us, and the ray gun goes, and we do some very bad acting. We go, yes, she's stolen our voices. Wow. And now, wait for it, she's going to put them in a box. Ooh, that's a plot for you. And now, she's going to hold the British government to ransom. Ooh. The British government, by the way, refused to pay up. So there you are. Typical.
Do you remember what the British ambassador said?
No, what did he say?
He was this old Colonel Blimp guy with a big bushy moustache, and he said, Chad Jeremy, not a penny for those blighters. Yeah, well, I can't blame him.
So anyway, fortunately, Batman and Robin were hard at work. And not a lot of people can say this. It's a bit like those parakeets. We are here with our voice restored to us entirely because of the good work of Batman and Robin.
Yes, thank you, Batman.
Okay, here's the song that was so rudely interrupted all those years ago by a woman in a cat suit.
Ready? 3, 4.
Thank you.
Okay, here's one from a later album of Cabbages and Kings. Thank you. Those of you that know this album. Hardcore fans. I'm responsible for this one, wrote it in 67. And it's called Progress, or as you would say, Progress. And you can be the judge as to whether we've made any progress or progress since 1967.
Ready? 2, 3, 4. This song is called the Memory Song. A lot of people claim to have written this, including Tom Paxton, but I don't believe him. I first heard it, and the guy who sang it was called Steve somebody, but I can't remember his other name. And, you know, my brain is resembling Swiss cheese these days, so this song really spoke to me. So those of you who wear glasses, you know where I'm going with this. Looking for my wallet and my car keys. They can't have gone too far. If only I could find my glasses. Then I'd know just where they are. I'm supposed to meet someone for lunch today, but I can't remember where or who it is that I am meeting. It's in my BlackBerry somewhere, which I left on the kitchen counter, or maybe in the car. The last time I remember driving was to that memory enhancement seminar. What's that far off distant ringing? That strangely familiar tone must be the person I am meeting, calling on my cordless phone, which I left upstairs in the bathroom. Or was it outside on the lawn? And now there's only one more ring to go before my phone machine turns on. Hello, I'm sorry I'm not here to take your call, but if you leave your name and number at the tone, I'll try to remember to call you back when I get home. This is Carol, and I'm trying not to cry. I've been waiting for over an hour now. How could you do this to me? And I thought you loved me. This is goodbye. That voice sure sounds familiar. That name, it rings a bell. Where the hell was I? Oh yes, I'm looking for my wallet and my car keys. They can't have gone too far. If only I could find my glasses. Oh, not again. Here they are. We'd like to sing for you the last hit we ever had. We didn't know it at the time. Actually, it would have rather spoiled the fun, wouldn't it, if we'd known that. This is the last hit we're ever going to have. No, anyway, never mind. We wrote this Snowed In Maine, and I'm surprised because we were callow youths at the time, weren't we?
Yeah.
And it's rather a lovely song, so. The band obviously isn't here. It's a recession. Yeah, what can I tell you? And so we're going to sing it for you, Acapulco. Actually, it's kind of cool. It's pretty.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Somewhere in the shadows of my mind, I know there is for me, who only needs my touch to live, and I will know that you, a she, walk to me and take me by the hand
and lead me
to
the bright
untarnished sea, there give me love and share my dream. And I will know that you are she. Don't even know the color of your hair, but once I see you standing there, I will know you instantly. So if you're in the fields across the way, And wondering if you dare come up to me, don't hesitate,
don't be afraid, for I will know that you are she. For I will know that you are she.
Jeremy's acting in London. I'm a music teacher in Sun Valley, and I teach a lot of people a lot of things. But my favorite guitar student of all time passed away 2 weeks shy of his 21st birthday. And I'm not trying to tell you that to depress you, because he had a very bad disease, and he's a lot better off where he is now. And we like to sing, play rather, this for Tyler, because I like to think of him playing this duet with one of his idols who actually wrote it. And it's a sort of acoustic rendition of an old Hendrix favorite, Purple Haze. Don't laugh, it's kind of cool actually.
That's
not very loud, does it? Here it is, Purple Haze, acoustic version. Ready? 3, 4. CDs for sale. It's a strange coincidence. And it's an album called Archaeology, and it has 18 songs on it. I hope some of you have it already. But thank you. They're so nice. They applaud anything I say. I just love that. I'd like to recite the alphabet. Okay, yeah. Maybe not. Anyway, this next song is...
That's Wolf again.
Takes me back to Idaho. I hear that sound every night. I do.
We don't have them in London.
These wolves. No, you know, he hightailed it to London, but I went native. I did. He accused me of being an American. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes.
Archaeology.
This next song is not on that album, but it is supposed to be the title song of the new one that we're still working on.
And there is actually, we are actually right now, the next one actually is going to be a live album, and it will be on that, a live version. Anyway.
So
it's cool.
I love this song. I could say that because I didn't write it. Jeremy wrote it with his lyricist, David Pierce. And, all right. Hey, why don't you tell David he's got fans?
Yes, Zanzibar Sunset. There you are. Okay. I'll tell David you said that.
Yeah, he lives in London. David lives in Paris. It's a tough life, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to go to Paris and write songs. Tough.
Okay. Went back to the National Theatre at the end of the 60s, I thought, well, that's it. How wrong can you be? I think the first time I heard this was on television, Beverly Hills 90210, they played it. Well, whatever. And the next one, I'm sort of rather bummed about. It was a laundry detergent commercial. And that was deeply embarrassing, so we're not going to talk about that. And the next one was a movie called Rushmore with Bill Murray. And, yep, that movie did well.
Yeah.
And And then the next movie was The Princess Diaries, and every time the princess went into a dream, Jeremy started singing this song, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. There was a moment when we had an enormous amount of credibility with eight-year-old girls. It was entirely unexpected.
Yeah, but they've forgotten all about it now. They're fickle.
Yeah,
they really are. Then last and probably least, in 2006, ESPN played it 5 times on the Super Bowl, which is pretty cool. I was watching the game, then he fell off my chair, and I immediately picked up the phone to call him, because that's, you earn money doing things like that. And of course I forgot about the 7-hour time difference and woke him up, you know, and he's half asleep in the land of soccer and cricket, and he, all he manages to croak is, "What's the Super Bowl anyway?" Yeah, really, he did. Poor fella, he didn't know any better. So I said sorry and I hung up and I called him the next day. Anyway, here's the song. 3, 4.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. To say goodbye to you, wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. End someday. Autumn leaves must fall, but don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, no, no. It's like window pane. I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. And dream of you.
This is the encore. We decided a long time ago to dispense with the absolutely pointless ritual of walking off stage only to walk back on again. We figured that would save us a lot of energy and you. And so here we are, this is the encore. I claim credit for this because many moons ago in Boise, Idaho, I went to an Eagles concert, and there go the Eagles again, and they went off after a great set, and they didn't come back. And time was wearing on. This is back in the days of the big lighters, you know, the butane lighters. And this basketball arena was just, you know, it looked really cool. And we're all cheering and stamping and waving our lighters, and they just didn't come back. And they stayed away so long that all the butane is running out of the lighters. And it looks like, you know, Peter Pan, you know, do you believe in fairies? You know, all the lights are going out, you know? And it was really tragic. Anyway, they came back after 20 minutes. And I remember thinking, how long does it take to have a pee and a shot of Johnny Walker anyway? And so that's where the concept of the instant encore was born. Just that enthusiasm. All right. So here's the encore. Nearly there. In the immortal words of a sometime neighbor of mine in Sun Valley, the governor of California, he just has a big house up there. It's kind of bigger than mine, I have to say. Anyway, I'll be back. 2, 3, 4.
To be the last song that Chan and I recorded together in the 60s. And when you've heard it, you'll understand why.
We heard the song.
Yes. Ready?
Yep.
You need feet to stand up straight with. You need feet to kick your friends. You need feet your socks on and stop your legs from fraying at the ends. You need feet to join the army and to dance the hoochie coo. Yes, the whole world needs feet for something.
Funny games.